I was thinking when Rabbi Yehuda was mentioning famous pasuk, Mikamcha Yisrael Goy Echad Baaretz, who was like you, the Jewish people, that you're one nation in the land. That a couple of weeks ago, I go in the morning to daven New Square, which is right near where I live.
Maybe I speak a little loud. Nobody can hear.
Okay. Sometimes I go to New Square, and so one time, a couple of weeks ago, I was exiting the shul and heading out of the community, and this lady flagged me down, and I stopped the car like, what does she want? And apparently her kid had missed the bus. So she opens up, the car stops, she opens up the back door, and she stuffs her kid into the back of the car, and she says, you take him to the cheder? Okay, fine. She closed the door. I mean, I guess the reason why the kid missed the bus is because he was upset about something, whatever. And now I got this sniffling, crying kid in the back of my car, who's only speaking Yiddish, and I'm trying to speak to him with my broken Yiddish. And he still doesn't want to go to school, but I got him in the car and the mother went home. So where's he come from? I don't know. So I have to coax this kid out of my car. But I was just amazed at the trust that this lady showed me. So a couple of blocks later, I'm sitting there, I said, this is dein Norman, Shmilein. So I got to coax this kid, Shmilein. I gave him $1 to go to cheder. So I have to coax this kid out of my car. But it's our kid, it's my kid, it's her kid, it's our kid, what does it matter? So that's I was thinking about me, Kamplesu, that she trusted me to, I'm just passing by, leaving the shul, so she could put her kid into my car and say, take him to cheder. So I got to take her kid to cheder. I got to take my kids to cheder. We all got to take each other's kids to cheder, Bez Hashem. And that's a little bit on the subject of tonight. We happen to be in the zone right now where it's not too early, but it's also. It might be a little late, according to one opinion, to speak about the Rosh Hashanah Leilanos, to speak about the Rosh Hashanah for trees. Because according to Beis Shammai, Rosh Chodesh Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Leilanos, is one of the four Rosh Hashanahs of the year. We celebrate Rosh Hashanah for the trees. And according to Beis Hillel, so it's Tu B'Shvat, right? It's the 15th day of Shvat, so we still have yet to come to Tu B'Shvat, but we're in that time. We're celebrating. I remember as a kid getting a little baggie with the all the little nuts and fruits and everything, and the ubiquitous carob. That thing that looks like that you break your teeth on that little nut that's inside of it or whatever. I never knew exactly how to eat it safely. That's where you lost the fillings. I think the dentist donated those to the But apparently it wasn't just in my Hebrew school where I went on Mondays and Wednesdays and Sundays, but it's all over the world. Everybody's giving out, even yeshivas, they give out the carobs and they give out the raisins and we'd sing, Rosh Hashanah Leilanos, the Tu B'Shvat Hegiyah and all the, don't start to sing. Okay, I won't start to sing, I'll make a pact with you. I promise my kids I would not sing in public, or neither would I speak Yiddish. I think I might have violated one or two of them here tonight already. So the premise is that here it is, it's Rosh Hashanah for the trees, and yet when we take a look out, we see a frigid landscape. I mean, Baruch Hashem, it hasn't been such a brutal winter, at least these last couple of weeks, but what we see in front of us is wintertime. So it seems a little bit out of place that this is the time of the year where we're celebrating trees, and even Eretz Israel, where there's a little bit more southern climate, it's not quite the warm temperature, it's not quite, the blossoming of the trees, so what's it all about? And also, maybe combined with this, it's really the same question from a different angle, is that here we are, we're reading in this time of the year, we're reading the parshios that have to do with Pesach and Exodus and Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Makos, and the kids coming home with parshios about the Makos, and yet Pesach is not, we didn't even get the Purim yet, and already now we're celebrating and we're reading about Pesach. So it seems like if the Torah is set up right, then the gear should be meshing in such a way, and everything should be coordinated in such a fashion that these parshios that we're reading right now, parshios Va'eran and Bo and Bashal, should come out right in the middle, right during the middle of Pesach season, of Zman Cheroseinu. But yet it's Makdim, it's a little bit earlier. So what's going on? What's it all about? How come it seems imperfect, but maybe it's a little bit more perfect than we would give credit for at first glance. So maybe I'll just introduce with a beautiful Mishnah in Perkei Avos that has a troubling statement. And the Mishnah says like this. I'm sure most people are familiar, they've heard it. The Mishnah says, "Ha'holach b'derech," somebody's going on the way, "U'mafsik mi'mishnaso," the person interrupts their learning, V'amar, and he says, Mayafa ilanzeh, how beautiful is this tree? Mayafa nirzeh, how beautiful is this field? So then the Mishnah continues and it says, Amra kasav alav, the verse says about him, is ki'ilu mishayev es nafsho, it's considered as if the person put himself or herself in mortal danger. It means they're drunk driving, they haven't gotten insurance, you haven't got your license, you know, whatever happens to you at this point over here, right, you're multitasking, right, you're talking on the cell phone, you're distracted, drive, you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, and if something happens, you know, it's your own fault. You ain't nobody else to blame except yourself. You did it to yourself. So what's so terrible? I remember somebody once asked Rabbi Avigdor Miller, I was listening to a tape, and it was a very good question. It was a bomb kasha. They asked, look at this mission over here, right? A heilig bederek, someone's going on the way, interrupts his learning, and says, Mayafa ilan zeh, mayafa nir zeh, how beautiful is this field, how beautiful is this tree. Rav Miller spoke, I think, one third of his tapes. Most of his lectures were taken, were extracted from Shar Bechina, from the second chapter of Sefer Chovos HaLevavos, that talks about the quick way that we can come to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world. Ma poel kel. You see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu made in the world. Elokim osa sheyiru lemefanav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world, that we should fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should become aware, we should be conscious of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made everything in such a way that no matter where you're going to put your microscope, no matter where you're going to put your telescope, you're going to come up with wondrous examples of the brilliance, the genius of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're going to see the kindliness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu shouting out from every corner. And you're also going to see, at the same time, you're going to see the unity, the aftness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Miller always spoke about, you know, fruits and trees and these type of things. He spoke about, for example, he says an orange is so beautiful that an orange, when it's not ripe, it's green, it hides amongst the green leaves. And you can't see, you know, the orange is camouflaged amongst the leaves. When it's ripe, right, then it turns orange and it says, now it starts to stand out amongst the green leaves, and it says, pick me, I'm ready to be eaten. If you would take it when it's green, and you try to peel it, it's not so easy to peel a green orange, right? And then when you finally, if you would peel it, you'd be successful in peeling, you bite into it, it's also a little bit bitter. Those seeds, apparently, that come from a non-ripe orange, if they're put into the ground, they don't produce another seed. It's not the right time for them to be brought out into the open. But when they're orange, so the peel comes off easy, the bright color is attractive to us, what a brilliant scheme, right? You get a bottle of orange juice or a container of orange juice, and you also see that all the orange, the beautiful, attractive coloring and advertisement is all on the outside. It's very, very nice, because there's nothing more attractive than putting an orange on the outside of an orange container. There's one orange company, I don't know why, it's blue on the outside. You know, I don't know, it just doesn't have the same appeal, right? If you want to sell an orange juice, so what picture, what color do you think you should put on the outside, huh? Put an orange on the outside. Put a picture of an orange tree that's ripe with red with orange oranges, okay? Because that's attractive. However, Rav Miller pointed out, when you peel off the orange from the outside, you see the orange is attractive on the outside, but on the inside of the peel, it's all white. Why is it white on the inside? Because the advertiser didn't want to waste print. You never get into the inside of the orange juice container and look inside and you see orange color or printing. He didn't bother printing on the inside of the container. Because the color was put there only to let us know that the producer of it, that the one who's presenting it, the presenter, wants to make it in such a way it should be attractive and alluring to us. Isn't that brilliant? Isn't that beautiful? And therefore you see that somebody, whoever is selling us this orange, understands our psyche, understands what appeals to us. The Talmud says a blind person has no benefit from his food. I mean, to pick on a blind person, but we understand that part of the great enjoyment that we have with food, and every balabusta understands it instinctively, is presentation. You know, when you see that Israeli salad tossed in all the green and the red and, you know, and the light greens and all the contrasting colors and the peppers, oh! And then you come out with the ketchup. You know, ketchup has to be red. My kids came home with some kind of green ketchup, some kind of brown ketchup. You know, I didn't want to put those on my French fries. I'm sorry, you know. I like to see that red stuff coming out. Anticipation, you know. I hear Carly Simon singing, you know, when I'm squeezing that orange container over there. I mean, the bright red ketchup, because that's attractive. A blind person doesn't have that benefit of seeing it before he eats it, because part of the great pleasure of it is the anticipation, is the attraction to it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a beautiful world, therefore, for us. And Rabbi Miller was always speaking about these things. By the way, one of the interesting and beautiful observations he made... I'll have some brown soda now. Excuse me for a second. Amen. One of the observations that he made was that you notice, and I was thinking about it just tonight, what did we have? Oh, I know. He says that drab foods, drab colors, are not ready to be eaten. So they always need preparation. He says bright colored fruits, he says, are always ready to be eaten right now in the present. You know, take a bright pepper, you can slice into it, you can begin to eat it. Take a bright apple, a bright orange, a tomato, you know, a potato is drab. So then you have to cook a potato. Nobody bites into a potato. Tonight I was thinking about the sweet potato. When we cut that sweet potato open and the steam started coming, I said, look at that, look how beautiful, delicious it is on the inside. Somebody asked him, Rabbi Miller, what about a cantaloupe? A cantaloupe is drab, it's dull on the outside. So he said, the answer is, he says that a cantaloupe is not to be eaten by one person. Right? Right? When you slice it open, you know, and your husband and wife are sitting there, each with their half of cantaloupe, with a cottage cheese planted in the middle, you know, a little mountain, you know, I'm not going to tell you, or maybe a kiwi with a toothpick stuck into it for Sheva Brachas or something, you know, however it is, you know, oh, now it's ready to be eaten. You don't see people walking around eating cantaloupes, you know, excuse me one second, I'm eating a cantaloupe, oh my God, you don't do that. It says, slice me open and present me with a knife and a fork. And cut a little bucket out for me and break it into slices like it, and now it's ready to be eaten. What a beautiful observation. He said, you can see the chesed of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You can see the wisdom of a Kodesh Baruch Hu from every corner, from fruit, from everything. So beautiful. That's what Rabbi Miller spoke about constantly, constantly. Millions and millions of examples. He flooded the world with these beautiful examples. So what does the Mishnah mean, Rabbi? A hailuch b'derech, umafsikin mishnah so. How beautiful is this tree? Mayafa near zeh, how beautiful is this field? It's ke'ilim, it's chayav, it's natural to a person not put himself in mortal danger. What's the problem? What's so bad? You know, the mission says, don't look. You know, you're middle of learning Seder. Don't look at the beautiful day, there's a beautiful sunset. Don't look. What's wrong? What's wrong with sunset? My wife and I had a big test in this area. We're driving upstate New York. We're on our way to Montreal for Shabbos. And it was in the springtime, and beautiful plowed fields. Mayafa near is a plowed field. We saw beautiful trees out in the country. You see trees that, you know, like big bearded rabbis. You know, there they are. You know, like all the way around. They were full with full body leaves all the way around. Wholesome trees. Not like in New York, you had a tree looking for. Oh, I see light over there. You know, and it tries to shoot up, and this. They have to do all kinds of distortions in order to get light. You see these big trees in the middle of a field. Mayafa ilan zeh. It's a good thing, dear, that we're not saying divrei Torah because we keep on saying wow. Wow, my yafa near zeh, my yafa ilan zeh. But the question is, what's so bad? So someone asked Rabbi Miller that question, and he said the following, he gave up Marshall like this. He said, the Chassan Kala talking on the phone, whispering sweet nothing. Yeah? And the Chassan's in the middle of one of his diatribes. You know how Chassanim can be. You know, he's telling you this, and he's giving instructions about that, and he's telling, and all of a sudden, you know, usually when you're in conversation with somebody, you like to hear every once in a while a little you know, some kind of a nod, acknowledgement, some kind of echo, some feedback, some mirroring, something going on the other side. You hear silence. Hello, are you there? If you don't hear something for a while, hello, are you there? Hello, are you there? The connection is still open, the line is still open, and yet he doesn't hear anything. Hello, 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 is everything all right? Maybe it's a medical emergency, maybe, well, who knows what happened over there, and there's no dial tone, there's nothing, hello, hello, what's wrong? 20 minutes go by, suddenly the phone picks up on the other side, and she goes, oh, I'm so sorry, dear, I'm so sorry. He says, what happened, are you all right? First of all, you're all right? Yeah, I'm fine. He says, so what happened? I didn't hear anything from you for 20 minutes, I'm yelling, I'm shouting, what happened that caused you to go away from the phone? She goes, you know that beautiful diamond ring you got me? Yeah, I was looking at it while we were talking, and suddenly the light came in the room in such a way that it, you know, it entered into the diamond. It was sparkling. It bedazzled me. I became hypnotized by its beauty and its splendor. And it was just so, you know, alluring. And suddenly, you know, the phone slipped out of my hand, and I was just like, you know, stuck looking at it. You know, it was so beautiful. So the chassan hears her lame, explanation over here. You know. And he says, I have a mind to break the shidduch. I'd like to break the shidduch. Okay, doesn't sound like such a nice chassan either, you know. So makbid, you know. He says he wants to break the shidduch. Why does he want to break the shidduch? He explains. He says, look. He says, I think you have the value system that I thought you had. He says, I gave you the diamond ring. He says, to remind you of me when we're not together, and when we're not communicating. He says, but when I'm talking to you and we're speaking with each other, so what do you need the diamond ring for? You know, it's a little bit like that mother that's walking down the street, and she's got the little baby in the carriage, and someone says, oh, what a cute little baby! So I said, you think the baby's cute? You should see the pictures. And she takes out a whole folder of pictures. How can the pictures be cuter than the baby himself? So, you know, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong, you know, because you're here looking at the diamond. The Almighty, and the Rebbe listen, the Almighty says that the diamond is that beautiful nature, that beautiful world that a Kodesh Baruch Hu created with all of its chesedim, with all of its kindliness, all of its manifold goodliness, that it's packed, a tov ma'od, v'yelukim es kol ha'asa, v'hinei tov ma'od, the world of tov ma'od. It's so beautiful. It's so dense with beauty and kindliness. It's dripping with goodness. So Kodesh Baruch Hu made that, he says, that should remind us in Shar Bechina, should remember that there's a Shar of Odes Elokim, to remind us that when we're learning Torah, we're listening to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Im ha'vahayim shemo, if you're going to listen. Im lo sishmo li, if you're not going to listen to me. Divrei Torah is listening, Shema Yisrael, listening to Kodesh Baruch Hu. So therefore, if he interrupts the learning, that is masik mimishna sam, he interrupts his mishnah, he interrupts his learning in order to take a look at the tree. He says that's what he's talking about. Okay, we still have to understand the context of it. What I would like to know, and the question I would like to know, and I didn't see anybody ask the question. I asked it myself, and I'd like to come up with an answer. I'd like to present my own answer for whatever it's worth. We know the mishnah is also very terse; it doesn't waste words. How come the mishnah says bayafa nirza? Why does it say a plowed field and a beautiful tree? Right? Why those two examples? Why did it say what a beautiful sunset? Why did it say what a beautiful apple? Why did it say what a beautiful child? Right? How come it gave those two examples? Why didn't it just give one example? Mayafa Nirza. Why did it say Mayafa Ilanza? Why did it give those two examples? That's my question. So maybe to understand the answer to that question, we'll mention there's a famous Gemara that maybe explains why our little baggies, when we went to Hebrew school, Hebrew day school, yeshiva, whatever it is that we found ourselves in, that they always stuffed it with the carobs. You know, that's not one of the seven fruits that Eretz Israel is praised with, right? That was the song where kids would say, these are the seven fruits that Eretz Israel is praised. It's not one of the yeshivas meaning. So why did the carob, why are we haunted by the carob, you know, for all these years? Besides the dentist reasons. Well, why? So the Gemara tells us that there was a person, his name was Choni Hamagel. And the Talmud says such a story like this, that Choni Hamagel, you know, everybody I'm sure heard of Choni Hamagel. Choni Hamagel was famous. Magel means circle. He's the circle man. Choni the circle man. I think his name also has to do with Chayn. He was Motza Chayn. He found grace in the eyes of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he was Mr. Prayer. He drew a circle around himself at a time when there was no water in Eretz Israel, and he says, I want water, and I'm not leaving the circle. The Gemara says chutzpah a little bit, you know? But if he wouldn't be Choni Hamagel, he wouldn't have gotten away with it. But he got away with it. He says, I'm not leaving the circle until you give us water. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave water. It was too much water. He said, I didn't ask for that much water, you know? And then the water calmed down. He got exactly, he was able to moderate with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and he got what he asked for. Choni Hamagel, he's famous for all time as the Mr. Circle. I'm not leaving the circle, Kodesh Baruch Hu, until you give me what I'm looking for. So Choni Hamagel had that power of prayer. And there's that old phrase, watch out what you ask for, you might get it. So Choni Hamagel, the Gemara tells us, was bothered all the days of his life by a famous pasuk that we all know. And the pasuk says like this, Shir Hamalos B'Shuv Hashem Es Shivas Tzion Hayinu Kecholmim. He said, when Hashem returns the captives, then we will have been like dreamers. It's not to be read, the Vilna Gaon points out, I guess probably based upon this Gemara, that the way we read the words is not when the final redemption comes and we return to Zion, we return to Eretz Israel, that we will be dreamers. You know, suddenly we're going to go, you know, it's going to be strawberry fields forever or something, you know, it'll suddenly go into some kind of like, you know, psychedelic mode or something like that, and then we'll all be dreaming over there. No, he said, we will have been like dreamers. That means we were dreaming all this time. And then finally we wake up from our dream. When a person's asleep, they're not aware of certain realities, and suddenly they're watching, oh, they're talking in their sleep, watch out, all the fears and anxieties of whatever they're afraid of tomorrow, and whatever they were guilty of yesterday, you know, and suddenly you find your old teacher there with your mother, it's like the Wizard of Oz, all spinning around, and you know, all around you, all the different things that are haunting a person, and the goblins, and the ghoulins, and everything is all mixing a person's mind, and we're not aware of where we are and what's going on. We're not aware of the full depth of our reality. So we realize after the redemption that we were sleeping, and the exile that Choni Hamagel had for a reference point was the exile of the 70-year hiatus, the 70-year break between the Babylonian exile, and then finally the Persian exile, the end of the Purim story, and then finally we return after 70 years. That's the 70 years. So Choni Hamadlis says, is it possible that a person's going to sleep for 70 years? What's the pshat? I don't understand. A person sleeping for 70 years? Does that make sense? A person's going to sleep for 70 years? I don't understand it. He was bothered all the days of his life with this question. So the Gemara says that he was walking along the way. One day, he bumps into a man. He's out there planting in the field, in his field, and the fellow's planting a carob tree. He says, what are you planting? He says, I'm planting a carob tree. He says, how long does it take for a carob tree to mature till you can get fruit from it? He says, 70 years. He says, fellas, you really expect that you're going to live long enough to reap the fruit from the carob tree that you're planting now? The fellow says, no, I harbor no illusions that I'll be eating from this tree. He says, but he gives an unbelievable answer. He says, I came into a world in which there were carob trees and fruits and things that were planted by people from previous generations. He says, and I would like to leave a legacy for my children and for future generations that they should have carob trees in the future that were planted by me. I'm returning the kindness. I'm passing on the kindness that I myself received. So Choni Hamadlis continues on the way after getting from that local farmer, he gets such a deep, beautiful answer. So the Gemara says that he continued on his way. He had a little box lunch with him, and he ate something, ate some bread. That's what it says. I think it was white bread, right? Because I know when I eat pizza, white bread or something like that, on Shabbos it does it to me, or he had an extra bowl of chalt or something like that. He had something that made him a little bit drowsy, and he sat down just to put his head down for a few minutes. And he got covered over by a covering, and he slept. He was out of sight, and he was missing action, and he slept for 70 years. Right? Eat your heart out, Rip Van Winkle. Right? There he is. You know? He slept for 70 years, believe it or not. Now the Gemara continues, and tells us an unbelievable tale, that Choni Hamadlis wakes up, and he starts to go back like, you know, he wakes up, still a little tired. You know? Still wish he'd had 5 more minutes. You know how it goes. You know? Oh, I only had 5 more. And he starts back on his way, and he goes, and he sees a fellow picking carobs from a carob tree. He said, wait a second, you know, something's going on over here. He says, are you the fellow that was just planting the carob trees? He says, no. He says, it can't be. Something's out of place over here. He says, that was my grandfather who planted these trees. He says, your grandfather? And then it starts to dawn on him, you know, woo, 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 woo. You know, he's in the twilight zone, you know. I've been sleeping for 70 years. What happened over here? And then he sees that his donkey had, you know, had children and grandchildren. He parked his donkey over there, and now he sees generations and generations of his donkey, you know, generations later. He goes back home, he goes to his house, he sees his grandchildren running around, named Choni Juniors, all over the place, little baby Chonis running around. And he says, whatever happened? He asked for a son. He says, oh, his son, Choni's son, passed away so many years ago. He says, who are you? He says, where's grandchildren? He says, you're Choni's he says, I'm Choni Hamadlis. Mommy, there's a man outside that thinks he's Choni Hamadlis. You know, gotta get him out of here. He's a crazy man. You know, call the police. He knows what he's gonna do next. So nobody accepted him. Nobody understood him. He went on to the base medrash. He's with the base medrash. He'll find himself at home. In the base medrash, they're quoting Choni Hamadlis. The Choni Hamadlis used to answer the questions this way, and Choni Hamadlis used to answer the questions that way. And Choni Hamadlis understood things so clearly, we understand things the way they quote, the way Choni Hamadlis understood things. Wow. He left a legacy. He has Talmidim. He has people who are following and learning in his dera, Choni Hamadlis. And then he says, you know, you have to listen to him for a while. He says, you never guess who I am. I'm Choni Hamadlis. And they said, you can't be Choni Hamadlis. Choni Hamadlis is missing in action. He died 70 years ago. He's gone for a long time now. This guy, who's this Marani, this old man who thinks he's Choni Hamadlis? They don't believe him. They don't accept him. He finds himself isolated. He's only an observer in this world over here. He's watching these children that are his grandchildren. He's watching the people learning in his name over there. So you know what? He gets a little bit down. And he says, the Gemara says, Chavrusi or Masusi? Give me a Chavrusa. Right? I went to the Mashgiach like this also with this appeal one time. You know, give me a Chavrusa or give me death. You know, I can't be in a world where, you know, I don't care what they say. I won't stay in a world without a Chavrusa, without company, without respect. And his petition was accepted, and he died. A little bit strange, you know. You think it's so important, you know, that you have a chavrusa. You think he's seeing all these wonderful things that are happening in front of him. What's going on? What happened over there in that little story over there? That little episode with Choni Hamadlis. So maybe we can understand like this, by examining one little hint into the concept of what's happening with Rosh Hashanah Leilanos. Why are we looking out at the trees at this time of the year? So the Chazal tell us, and actually the Ikker Tosfos Yontif, I'll quote over here in a second, says, why is this the cutoff point, sort of the fiscal cutoff point, the fiscal, spiritual cutoff point to decide whether trees were from the previous year or trees, the fruits that are growing are from this year? So he says that cutoff point, he says, most of the Gishmei Shana, most of the rain of the year has gone up, but all the Hasarah Bilonos, that the rain that came through the winter time when the trees look like they're gestorben, when they look like they're dead, and they're standing there like still statues, it looks like nothing's happening. During that particular time of the year, when everything looks like it's dead, and you look at the frigid horizon, it's not that nothing's happening. Great things are happening, amazing things are happening at that time of the year. What's happening? The water is seeping into the ground. It's going into the roots of the trees. Every tree it has a multifaceted network of underground roots and all these beautiful branches that are reaching out under the ground that you don't see and I don't see. Everybody loves to celebrate the beautiful oranges that come at the end of the tree, but most of us are sleeping and we miss out on what's going on underneath the ground. So it seems that what happens is we're going basar chanata, the Gemara says, that we're going after when that little bud begins to appear at the edge of the tree. Like that little ink starts to appear, that little bubble at the edge of the pen. So what happens is that means that through the xylem and phylum, through the processes of the capillary action or whatever, however, I remember something from ninth grade biology, that all that stuff has now been pushed up and it's been turned from that water, has been turned into syrup. All the good work has been done. Right? Everything is just waiting to burst forth. The fruits and the vegetables and all that good stuff is ready to come up out of the veins of the trees and to burst onto the scene. So when all the work is done, all the hidden, underground, inside, internal work of the tree has already been accomplished. Mazel tov. And therefore, the Rosh Hashanah for trees is more interested in celebrating the process of the underground, the hidden processes of how the trees are producing their fruit. Everybody can applaud when you see fruits at the ends of the trees. But the hidden work, to know that there's things that are happening when it doesn't look like anything is happening, there's plenty that's happening. So maybe with that, we can understand what happened with Choni Amagel over here. Because Choni Amagel was a tzaddik. He was a Talmud Chacham. He was a father. He had a donkey, so he must have had some, he had properties. And he invested and he took care of these things, all these issues of life. He learned and he left a legacy of learning. He had students and he passed on, and children and students, and he passed on his Torah to them. And he did his work in his lifetime. And then what happened is, he falls asleep for 70 years, and he gets a visitation into the future. He gets a peek into a world that most of us would never see. He sees what things are going to look like 70 years later. And when he goes in to see what's happening 70 years later, he says, I don't have a place over here. This is not my place. My place is in the Olam Ha'asiyah, is in the world of action. I'm not here to be an observer and to watch and to see what's going on. Right? I'm coming from the world, the underground world, the hidden world, and that's where we do our work. We do our work in a hidden world. That's where our 70 years are lived at. Underneath the ground, in a place where we don't see what it is that we produce. And then he goes, and you see, he gets a look at that world, but he has no function over there. He has no purpose over there. If he has no functional purpose, so what's he going to sit and just watch fruits and watch the work of the production of his life? This is not purposeful. This is not meaningful to me. And now we understand that this fellow told him, that the 70 years, he says, I'm planting something for the future, the guy with the carob tree. I'm not planting for me to eat for me. I'm planting for worlds that I'll never see, for children that I'll never see. I'm receiving from the works that people, and I'm a product of the work that other people had invested in the world. And I'm passing on something to other people that I'll never know and I'll never see who it is that I benefited with the work that I did during my lifetime. We're working underground over here. Although we think that we would like to see what it is that we produced. But the real importance of the work that we do in life is underground. It's in the hidden world. It seems like it's a dreaming type of world over here. So maybe now we can go back and we can understand a little bit the question that Choni Amagel posed. And he says, is it possible for a person to sleep for 70 years? Is it possible? Let's understand this. He said that Rav Aaron Cutler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he said over on the based on the last words of the last prophet, Malachi, where it says, Hine Anofi Sholeach Lechem, I'm sending to you, Es Eliyahu Anovi, Lifnei bo, before it comes, Yom Hashem, Hagadol v'Hanora. Before that great day comes, the great and awesome day, where Eliyahu HaNavi is going to introduce Mashiach. So he says over there, he says, what's Gadol v'Nora? What's so great and awesome about that day of Hashem? What could be more great and awesome? What could be more great and awesome than, for example, Yom Noroyim, the days, we call the days of awe during Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. What's more awesome than that? Mi Yichye v'mi Yamus. What's more awesome than that? What's more awesome and frightening and awe-inspiring than the time when a person actually comes up, Lifnei Kisei HaKovod, the person has to go and give an account in what he did during his lifetime. So Ron Cutler says like this, let's give an example. He says there was a person, his name is Rashi, okay? Most people heard of Rashi, yeah? So Rashi was he lived 60 some odd years, I think. Yeah, my boys know all these calculations over here, which day he was born, how many years later, okay? But I think it was 60 some odd years, 1,000 years ago approximately, you know? So he lived almost 70 years. So Rashi lived almost 70 years, 1,000 years ago, and he was a father, and he had, I think, four daughters or five daughters, and his five daughters he married off to nice Talmid Chachamim, they became the Balei Tosfos, right? And he was a wine merchant, and he had a shul, and he had Talmidim, fine, very nice. After 70 years, he goes up in front of the Kisei Din, you know, did you do business honestly? Did you fix time for Torah? So he gets a chance to nod his head yes on a few of those things. What type of father were you? What type of husband were you? What type of neighbor were you? What type of friend? Oy, 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 you know, he has to face all those different things. Manora hamakom hazeh. How awesome is that encounter? But also Rashi had the good intelligence, right? As it says in Mishlei, pre-tzadik eitz chaim, the fruit of the tzadik is a tree of life. He had the good sense to keep copious notes. And as he's going through the Talmud, he's writing down and he's addressing all the local issues of the Gemara with a global perspective, which means he's giving the answer. What does this Gemara mean? What does this Gemara mean? And then he goes through Tanakh the same way. And he gives an example and he brings the Talmud, the address of the Talmud, he brings it to bear in this verse where it's necessary to try to open up what's the question in the verse. Where there's missing information or extra information, and Rashi comes to fill in, to glue those bricks together, to hold the whole Tanakh together. And then for the next 1,000 years, okay, Rashi happened to make it into the inside column of the Talmud when it was reprinted. And his little kuntras, his little notebook, turned out to be the notebook, the key to opening up the Talmud, and his grandchildren checked his works and they ended up on the outside column. And therefore every little child, in school child, for the next 1,000 years, who wants to put on tefillin, who wants to light Shabbos candles, who wants to do any mitzvahs, who wants to shake a lulav in an ashram, who wants to learn Torah, who wants to learn Talmud, who wants to do anything, almost every mitzvah that we do and that our parents did and our grandparents did and our great-grandparents did for the last 1,000 years is all credited to Rashi. Because Hine, Anochi Shalei Lachem, at the end of times, after 1,000 years and more, suddenly there's a big registry up there, there's a big accreditation, And accounting where Rashi is going to be accredited with all of that accomplishment of mitzvahs that he did that lived beyond his lifetime. Oyla Toldos, right? These are the generations of Rashi. This is what Rashi had created, right? And that's what's Gadol v'Nora. That's something which is beyond even, you know, we just stand in awe. We're staggered by what type of calculation that must be. We go to the other side. We flip to the other side. Mida Tova Maruba. But we flip to the other side. And let's say there's somebody, I don't know, Karl Marx, I don't know, creates a new religion. Religion is the opiate of the masses. Comes up with a new worldview that tries to push a Kodesh Baruch Hu out of the universe. Gives license to a Stalin, gives license to a Lenin. And for 70 years, they capture one quarter of humanity. Chinese people, 1.2 billion people, under the cloud of communism. Gives license to Stalin to stamp with both feet and put a wet blanket over the religious hearts of a quarter of humanity, so that people shouldn't believe in it. Kills 39 million people in the gulag. Who gave that permission? Who gave that license? Who gave that type of encouragement? And you get the ever widening avenue of darkness that's created from the words, from the mistakes that somebody made in their life. Somebody made a shidduch for somebody. Somebody gave somebody a job. Somebody helped somebody learn, turn on to learning. Somebody invited somebody for Shabbos. They started keeping Shabbos. And then all their children and the children's children, it's Yom Gadol v'Nora end of times, to see what a person could have accomplished and might have accomplished in their lifetime. It's hard for us to imagine what a person did, not just in the confines of their life, but what happens afterwards. That's why it says, pre-tzadik, eitz chaim, the fruit of a tzadik is a tree of life. Because a tzaddik is, you know, knows that I'm only here for 70 years. So if I'm smart, I'm going to leave behind a building. If I'm smart, I'm going to leave behind children. If I'm smart, I'm going to leave behind svarim. If I'm smart, I'm going to leave behind something that's going to continue to speak for me and talk for me and act for me far beyond the limits of whatever my life is about. It's a legacy that continues to go on forever and ever. I'm going to leave something that's going to go on with perpetuity from generation to generation. And most of the great people in life who accomplish things, we think, you know, oh, they saw it all. Most people who made great accomplishments in the world that we look back with didn't see anything happen in their lifetime. Abraham Avinu. Oh, Abraham Avinu! Elokei Abraham! Magen Abraham! What did he see? He saw 2 Enochah. He saw 2 grandchildren. And he made it a bar mitzvah. And then it was gestorben. Then he died. 2 grandchildren, that's all. Sorry, he made him. Didn't even see Yitzchak get married. She didn't see 1 grandchild. She didn't see Eretz Israel filled with Jews. She didn't see all the generations and generations of candlelighting that were going to come about from her candlelighting, and all the Shomer Shabbos, and all the brises and bar mitzvahs, and all the future generations. She didn't see it. She didn't see it with her eyes, but she might have seen it with her mind's eye. You know, Rav Aaron Kotler didn't see what he accomplished in his lifetime either. But it happens to be that maybe they had that vision. You see, it was one of the Rosh Yeshivas of Torah Vadas was in a room on a snowy day. And it was one of those days that nobody showed up for the class, practically 2 guys showed up. The next class was ready to take place, and there was somebody standing outside. I once heard it was Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. Inside, I heard also from a different, that might have been somebody, but Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, that's how I originally heard it, was in the room. And there was next person waiting outside to hear, you know, waiting for the next class to begin, waiting for that class to end. And so the period ends, that the class is over, but while the fellows listen to the class, they hear kolos ubrakim. They hear, whoa, fire and thunder and brimstone and boom, they hear the room is booming. And the class is over, the door opens up, out comes the Rebbe with a sefer under his arm, and 2 talmidim, 2 guys showed up. So the people waiting afterwards said, you know, all that noise, all that thunder, all that action, he said, for 2 talmidim, for 2 students? I said, I don't get it. And Rav Shlomo, he says, there's not 2 talmidim. He says, the fellow said, I thought there were thousands. He says, there were thousands. He says, because this one is going to have many children and he's going to become a rabbi. And this one is also going to have a family, a house full of children, and they're all going to carry on, and his children and his children's children are going to go into chinuch, and they're going to also educate generations. He says, I'm talking to thousands of people. And kachaya. So it was that the 2 fellows were there. One of them went into education. And this one had a big family. And he was talking that day to thousands of people. Thousands of people. My wife and I were at a vort in Monroe. First time I was ever in Monroe. Who was getting engaged? I think it was child number 15 out of 17. Okay? We knew the chassan. And we knew the kala very well also. So we arrived at the vort. The father I had met, he's marrying off his 15th. I think he was the oldest brother from his mother. So I sit down next to the father, comes over, he pulls me in, I sit next to him, he's got a long white beard. And he says to me, he says, L'chaim, okay, fine, mazel tov. He says, you see that woman over there? I said, I don't look at one. He said, no, he said, that elderly lady over there, that's my mother. I said, okay, I'll take a look. Okay. He says, she has 1,000 descendants. 1,000 descendants, this woman, at that time. She didn't look like, I showed my wife, I said, she didn't look that worn out, right? She's okay, huh? Yeah. The woman has 1,000 descendants. I mean, go home and do the math yourself. He's one of 16 or 17. Each of the 16 and 17 also had 16 and 17. Unbelievable. But that wasn't the part that amazed me. Then he says, and she, her father was a Ben Yochid, was an only child. Her father was an only child. Survived the war. Was an only child. And from that only child, right? So you imagine somebody saying, you know, I'm sorry, you know, got married later, you only had one child. That's one child. That one child has a daughter. And that daughter has 1,000 descendants. And he didn't see it in his lifetime, and the grandfather didn't see it in his lifetime. But a person doesn't know what it is that they're producing. We don't know what it is that we're doing in our lifetime because we're working underground. We don't see it. We're not here to witness. You might want to see what happens after it's all done. That's not our business. Our business is hayom lasosam, today to do them, umachar lechavoschar. And now we understand Chon Yamagel's question. Chon Yamagel asked, is it possible for a person to sleep for 70 years? Right? Is it possible for, if we understand what a person can accomplish in a lifetime, right? So now we have to go back and we have to remind ourselves, is it possible for a person to fall asleep for 70 years? Well, we know during the 70 years of a lifetime, because the premise is, right, the years of a person's life are 70, David HaMelech tells us, right? And if it happens to be with strength, you know, if we're strong, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us 80. So we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us a wise heart. So this is one of the great important things that we learn from looking at the trees at this particular time of the year, is that the Jewish way, it's very easy to appreciate, right? When you see beautiful, plump trees that are filled with fruits, people get excited. I notice when you go to people's houses, Jewish people's houses all over the world, I'm looking, okay, I'm in the right place. You look on the walls, and what do you see? You see elderly tzaddiki, right? You see big tzaddiki with long white beards. You see Rav Moshe. You see Rav Yaakov. You see Rav Palm. You see the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You see the tzaddiki. And then you also see little children, right? Little cherubic faces over here. You see this one when he was, you know, at the bris, this one at the bar. Sometimes you see also chasen kala. That's a whole other category. And so you never see pictures of middle-aged people. Did you ever notice that? You know, they have a big picture on the wall. This is my 37-year-old son-in-law, you know? He's going for hair replacement. And he's starting a new diet next week. He just took out a third mortgage, by the way, you know? And he's looking for a job. If you know anybody that's, you know, like, you know, oh my God, you know, what's going on over here? What happened to us middle people over here? What about that? Right, when you get a ticket for the airlines, you know, it's always the departure and the arrival. You know, what about what goes on in between? Isn't that also important? So I was wondering. So what's so exciting? Why do you have the picture of the tzaddik, and why do people have the picture of the little babies? Because when people see a tzaddik and they look into the face of a tzaddik, you're seeing actualized potential. You're seeing what happens, what a person could become, what a person could make out of themselves. When you take a look at a little baby, right? There's something amazing. They're a little baby. You hold a little baby in your hand, a brand new baby. I was at a bris the other day in Manhattan. It was like a very cold kind of a place, you know. It was in the Waldorf or Astoria. It was a very kind of a chilly type of, you know, secular atmosphere. When the moil came and he held up the baby for everybody to see, the whole room went, ugh. You get into the subway in Manhattan, you know, and someone strolls in with a little baby and everybody's trying to, like, not look at anybody. You know, the little baby goes, ugh. You know, suddenly everybody's inside. What is a little baby? A little baby is pure potential. That little baby can become anything. That little baby can become great. The story in our family was when my oldest brother was born, my great-grandfather, who passed away when I was 15, he was 86 at the time, so I got to know him, right? So he put his finger into the hand of my older brother, and in that little child, the grasping instinct that the child has, and he says, who knows, he says, what greatness these hands will produce for humanity, you know? That's the way a great-grandfather thinks and feels, because over here you have pure potential. There's no story like that about me. Okay, I just want to remind you that. I don't know what they were thinking when I was born. Like, who knows how much he will cost? You know, I don't know whatever it was. I think that was the story. I have to go back and check. So in any case, so when we take a look at these two things, we see the beginning. We see a seed. And then we go and we see a beautiful tree. We see something, a full tree that's filled with the fruits at the end. So we asked ourselves like this at the beginning, maybe we'll finish up with this idea again. We asked as a person, Holif, but that the person is going on the way. Va'amar, and he says, Ma yafa ilan zeh, Ma yafa nir zeh. How beautiful is this tree? How beautiful is this field? How beautiful is this field? How beautiful is this tree? What's so inspiring about a field? A field is pure potential. And we take a look and we see a tree, Ma poil kales, that's what can come out of the earth if the seed is put in there right. The Maharal says that man, Adam, is called Afermin Adama. He's called dirt. Man's called dirt. Not a nice term. But the reason why he's called dirt is because dirt is potential. If you take a piece of real estate and you develop it and you put a building on it, you can collect rent for generations and generations. If you plow it and you put trees in there, you can have an orchard that can give fruits and fruits for generations and generations. Carobs and oranges and all kinds of good things. If you leave it alone, you don't do anything to it. Then it becomes, you ever see an abandoned lot, it becomes more entangled and more thick and untenable and more snarly and more... And if a person doesn't educate themselves, they don't put a furrow in their brain, they don't plow themselves. And they don't prepare themselves. They don't learn proper musa, they don't learn proper hashkafa. And so when we see a field, we're saying, wow, beautiful child, that's pure potential. And that's what everybody is. Everybody's Adam. Everybody has that pure potential. And then we see a tzaddik, what it is that a person could become. And that's why I think the Mishnah chooses those two examples over there. That the person interrupts their learning and they see, this is what's possible in life, this is pure potential, and this is realized potential, and they don't put those two things together. They see both of them. Mayafa Yonzeh. Look at what a tzaddik is. Look what a person can produce in their lifetime. And then look what a person is. Look what a person that everybody's got potential, as Rabbi Yehuda was saying, that everybody's a plowed field. We came out to learn. We're here to receive. We're here to, how do we grow? How do we take the next step? And so a person says, oh, beautiful tree, beautiful field, but doesn't get the message. What's the tree and what's the field telling us? That we can make something out of ourselves. We can make something during our 70 years. So Choni Amagel asked the question, is it possible for a person to sleep 70 years? If we know what it is that we are producing, even though we may not see it, what it is that we're producing, and that we're working underground, we're working underneath, and we don't see what's happening, what's flowering on the top from what it is that we're doing. And if we did, so we'd just be observers over there, and it wouldn't help us any. So we're working in the underground, and that's really the celebration of the Rosh Hashanah Leilonos, the celebration of the trees at this particular time of the year, is that we're honoring the process, the work that goes on. Hayom lasosam, today to do them. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate the time we spent together.
Wow. That was really good. That was really good.